someone had to pass all of that down to you, right? The very, what I would call rigid rituals, etc., that you go through on a regular basis have passed down from rabbi to dad to you to your kids and so on, right?
Right.
The same thing holds true in like the tribes of Africa. They've done the same thing. The Mayan culture did the same thing. The issue that I have in America is we don't do that in America.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further. Welcome back to Weiss Advice. I am your host, as always, on this journey we like to call a podcast called Weiss Advice. My name is Yona Weiss, and with me today I have John Manis. John, what's going on, my friend?
Everything. So
everything's going on.
Texas having some fun. That's all.
What's not going on?
Yeah. Oh, life is good, man. Life is good.
How's awesome. Things? Awesome. Things are great. Really blessed. Grateful. Everything God gives us every day. And that's really what it's all about. Just open your eyes, recognizing the beauty of life. And just recognize that, you know, just be grateful. You know, we're alive, we have what we have, and hopefully that's everything we need.
We're on the same page then. It was good.
And you know, just to give our listeners a little bit of context, because we like to introduce our guests a little bit, you're founder and CEO of Pinnacle Storage Properties. So you are being in the self-storage space. How many units? Because I don't even know. I have your bio, but it's like... Sure. It's a lot. It's a lot.
So we currently have 17. We close on 18 here in 2 weeks. We've done 27 deals in the last 5 years. We've cycled out of some of them. We have over 1 million square foot of storage, almost 10,000 units. I mean, depends on how you slice that.
Right.
Some people look at doors. Some people look at square footage.
Right. So a lot.
We've done it all grassroots. So here we are 5 years later and over 1 million square foot.
Incredible. And is all of that just acquisitions, or have you done ground up development of those facilities also?
So out of the 27, there's one ground up that we actually got through permitting and everything that we just put under contract to sell at permit. We're not going to actually do the ground up development piece ourselves. Outside of that, all the others are either JVs with individuals that don't know storage but want to get into the asset class. Mm-hmm. Acquisitions, as I say, we buy under managed, under enhanced, expanded self storage properties.
Yeah, and you're doing pretty well at it. That's pretty. That's
fake it till you make it. How's that?
Well, I guess you've done well. you did a good job because you fooled me. I mean, that's. Oh, man. Well, so, I mean, obviously you didn't always come from self-storage. I'm sure people who have come across you and have maybe heard you on other podcasts have heard a little of the background, the story, how you really started off with nothing, no college education, which you like to share a lot of times, and went in, you know, a kind of a rough start to it, but have been doing really well over the past 5 years, I would say. So that's very exciting for you. And storage has done well for a lot of people and continues to do well. So I highly recommend, if you guys want to learn anything about storage or invest in the great state of Texas, self-storage, John is your guy.
If they want to go outside of Texas too, I'm still your guy. So we're now in Arkansas and Louisiana both, and we'll go almost anywhere. There's certain tenant states that I don't want to go to. But outside of that, I'll look at any opportunity.
Awesome. I mean, you have the real estate is awesome in so many regards, but you have the advantage of storage, which you don't have to deal with actual tenants and toilets and termites and the three T's that everyone is afraid of. I mean, termites you might have, but doubtful.
It's hard to eat metal. How's that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
what would you say someone who is listening to this, who's thinking about getting into self-storage? I mean, like I said before, you didn't start with any background in this. You kind of, in your own words, fake it till you make it. But seriously, someone who's thinking, is now a good time still to get into storage? And what's the best kind of barrier to entry, easiest barrier to entry for someone right now thinking to get involved?
So how I got involved is I traded my time for money, right? So I landed a district manager's job with Uncle Bob's, which is now Life Storage. So I learned, like, I did single family, small multifamily some 25 years ago personally. And then fast forward, after my retail career, ended up landing a job with Uncle Bob's and learned it that way. So to me, you either learn it or you hire it, right? So to give advice to anybody that's looking to get into storage is either go out and learn it and get engrossed and get involved in the SSA, the ISS, all the state conferences, think luncheons, all that kind of stuff, and learn it from the ground up, or go partner with somebody that always knows how to do it. And then just, I mean, you bring your strength to the table. So if your strength is finance, or your strength is equity, or your strength is being a broker and finding the deal or whatever, find somebody who knows how to operate them and partner with them. And there you go, hit the ground running.
So is that something you'd still be looking for? I mean, let's say me, I'm like, I don't know anything about storage and I want to get involved. And I come to John, I'm like, hey, what do I have to offer that could get me involved in a deal with John? And we're actually doing like live Shark Tank type thing right now.
It's awesome. So interesting enough is I always say there's four parts to a deal, right? You go out, you find it, you lock it up under contract, and you risk your own money. The second part is you raise the equity on your own deals. The third part is you sign on the debt for your own deals. And the fourth part is you operate the deal. So if I was in a conversation with you and you came to me and said, hey, I want to do a storage deal with you, I'd say, all right, well, you tell me what you're good at.
Which one of those four can you do?
I'm good at all four of those things. So
you don't need anyone.
Yeah, technically I don't, right? But if I want to grow double, triple, quadruple, you know, when I got into this doing it for myself 5 years ago, I thought I'd do one deal a year. But because I always tell people, don't be greedy, because we're not greedy. We've been able to do 27 deals, and that's because we give pieces of the pie away. So I would ask you, you know, of those different categories, what do you bring to the table? And obviously, I know you do cost seg and stuff like that. So I would say to you, well, not only do you bring the cost seg part of it, but what else do you bring? You know, you're part of a title company, you're part of whatever assets that you bring to the table. I would analyze what I always say is what workload you're going to put into it and what risk you're going to take, right? And based on the workload or the risk is how much of the deal you get. The more workload you take on off of my plate, the more the deal you can have. The more risk you take off of my plate, the more deal you can have. So I've done deals where we've only kept 10% of the profit of a deal, and I've done deals that we've kept 80% of the profit of the deal. So it really depends on what the other person's strength is that they bring to the table.
Very interesting. Okay. So that's it's a good food for thought. If I were to be any one of those things, you know, obviously we all have what we can bring to the table, but you know, if I had any one of those things, it would probably be raising the equity, something I do have a little bit of experience with. But again, there's, you know, I'd say that's, if I were to judge, and I don't know anything because I've never done a store, well, I've invested passively in storage, but I don't know anything about actually running a deal. But I would imagine that finding the deal is probably the most difficult of the four that you mentioned. Would you, me not knowing anything?
You not knowing anything, I think. So I think all four are hard. One, like finding the deal, we underwrite about 350 deals a year and we buy five of them, right? Mm-hmm. So we do look at a lot of deals. So if you're a newbie that you don't even know where to begin to look, and you're only going to look at 10 deals a year, you might not do any deals, right? So right. So we've created a machine enough that we get volume through the door through relationships and first looks and things like that, or head starts on other people. So we're able to get a lot of jump starts when it comes to looking at deals, not necessarily buying them. So, but we've also had 5 years of creating that machine,
right,
RM and everything like that, and relationships in the industry. I mean, I've been doing it for myself for 5 years, but I've been in storage for 16. Mm-hmm. So there are relationships out there in a 16-year time frame. So then the number two thing is, like, for me, when I started on my own, I thought I could raise $400,000-$600,000 and to get a deal done. And on my first deal, I raised $900,000 and surprised the living daylights out of myself. But holy crap, I almost raised $1 million, right? I thought I was King Kong at that point. Well, fast forward 5 years, I've raised $34.5 million doing deals for us. And so it's also, you know, I always said I never grew up in a country club environment or anything like that. I was very blue collar background. And because of that, you know, I wasn't exposed to the bankers and the finance guys and investors and where the true money's at. So because of that, I had this perception of raising money was hard, and it is. But I think I'll get to the next category, is signing on debt. Like, if you're not a millionaire, you can't buy on a $5 million loan, right? So when I started 5 years ago, I wasn't a millionaire, and I had a doctor out of San Antonio sign on the note with me, and I gave him a big chunk of the deal for him to sign on the note. So now I've established myself, and I'm able to sign on the note myself. And then the last thing is operating it. Is I don't think that the operators in storage get the credit that they deserve when it comes to how to run these things. So can you buy a storage property, limp your way through, and still make money? Sure.
Yeah.
Partner with somebody that knows what they're doing, you're going to make a hell of a lot more money. And that's the difference, is you get the banking guys and the equity guys and the broker guys that look down on the operational guys because, you know, I can go hire a third party manager. Well, you can.
You can, right.
They don't care for it like I care for it, because right. I make some money. So that's
for sure. So yeah, and you have, you know, any good business has a lot of systems in place that obviously you can replicate and improve from property to property, which takes a long time to develop, right? No one can come out of the starting gate knowing all the systems in place. So you do really have to, I mean, to maximize or accelerate that growth, you really should find someone to partner with that you can learn from.
Just something simple, like, all right, if I say to you, what vendors are you going to go use to run your storage property with? What software are you going to use? What website company are you going to use? Be like, I don't know. Where do I begin, right? Well, I've tested almost all of them in the industry, either by running them myself or at other companies running them, or just going out and testing them to figure out which one the best are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself, to me, you said you think that finding the deal was the hardest thing. And I disagree. I think operating the deal is the hardest thing.
Gotcha. Okay. And even, you know, having a third party manager run the property for you is obviously, you know, it's doable. They exist out there, I'm sure.
Right? I own one.
you own a third party management company.
We're kicking it off May 1st.
we already own
the management company and all the infrastructure. So we're going to offer it now to the rest of the storage industry effective May 1st.
Gotcha. Okay. It makes a lot of sense for someone like you to do that. But back to my point, what I was trying to make is that, you know, I could buy a property and, you know, find a deal, which to me, again, would be the hardest thing, and hire a third party company like, I don't know, Pinnacle, whatever you're going to call it. This isn't going to air before May 1st. So you can tell.
That's okay. I don't care. Even if it does. They can call me. I'll work something out.
All right. give them promo code Yona and you'll get your $5 discount. And, but again, you know, you can still make it profitable, right? I assume so. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing it, right? You wouldn't have a management company if you didn't believe that other owners couldn't still be, you know, well profitable by using you.
That's correct. There's two things there. One, we've we've been here for 5 years doing our thing, having our own management company, and we've really battled with whether we wanted to do third party or not. There's no money in it. It's kind of a lost leader. What it does for third party companies is it builds infrastructure for them, for them and for that particular asset. The reason that a person would want to use a third party company is because you're paying 6% of revenue towards a third party. So let's say you're doing $40,000 a month, you're paying $2,400 or $30,000 a year to have a bookkeeper, a district manager, a revenue management person, an operations coordinator, a president of the company, and so on, all for $30,000. Mm-hmm. Now you own a piece of each of them, but for $30,000, you get that wide breadth of expertise. Mm-hmm. Have to, one, go learn all of those categories yourself as a one or two partner person, company or whatever. But two, you can hit the ground running and do better than what you probably would have done before. But also, when I say I've tested all the vendors out there, I also know all the third-party companies out there, and I know we kicked their ass in quality. So that was the internal conversation, is we do so much better job at what we do on how we run a property in comparison to what would be my peers, that I said, well, let's do it. It helps infrastructure for us to spread out across all the other assets, but it also helps infrastructure for them, and it's a win-win. So if I'm going to stack myself up against my peers when it comes to operations, I mean, that's what started the whole John Manis brand, was operations. So right. I learned how to run them with one of the REITs, and then went on to run a company as a COO here in Houston, and that turned into here. And that's what, you know, for probably 6 years, that's all I did public speaking on, was operations of self-storage. Since then, I've grown a little bit. I know finance and equity and stuff like that now, but back then, that's all that I was known for, is being the operational guru. Mm-hmm. So why not maximize that for that person that doesn't know how to do it? And like, I'll partner with you, mm-hmm, or a third party manage your property, either or, doesn't matter.
Makes sense. Well, so what would you say is, you know, the biggest thing that you've gotten out of this whole career change? I mean, obviously you were in the management sector of it, right? You were doing it for many years and learned the business that way. But now that you have grown up and had taken on your own company, obviously that's entrepreneurial, right? But what has that given you, if you could sum it up?
I say money doesn't change you. Money makes you who you are, right? So that level of achievement has allowed me to be who I am. So the difference between me as a person versus me in the corporate arena is, in the corporate arena, they expect you to live in a box all the time, and that's the box you have to live in. Well, that has gotten me fired from my last two jobs because I don't fit into a box too well. So the thing that I've probably learned the most is me, allowing myself to be who I am in the business that I run and own, which I said many, many years ago, I like who I am. If they don't, that's tough shit, right? But I like me. So, yeah. So, but it allows me to be me, and I don't have to always be politically correct. I don't always have to live within that box. And I can go out and explore information and knowledge without worrying about that I'm going to hurt my boss's feelings because I'm stepping on his toes, because that's what he's responsible for and all that. It's allowed me to learn more and more about me and my team, and allowing them to explore without having to put them in a box or put my partner in a box or whatever the case is. So that's probably the thing I've learned the most.
That's awesome, because that really just shows a real, true leader, is that you're leading from, number one, from experience, but also you're leading from, allowing those people that are now in your corporation. I mean, I don't know if you want to call yourself a corporation, you know, that corporate world that you're
trying not to.
You're creating an environment that's kind of, you know, out of the box of the, you know, what most people would get if they were entering a corporate structure. Although, I mean, that is difficult to achieve. however you go about doing it. Because as you grow, I'm sure as you know, as you grow, you know, you're putting these things in place. And I guess it all has to do with the culture you're creating.
Yeah, when we first started the company, we came out with five core values. And they're based on Cassie, who's the president of Pinnacle Storage Managers. Her and I sat down and said, all right, who are we? Because we're very similar in drive and determination. And like you said, I like to tell everybody I don't have a college education. Well, neither does Cassie. And she's 27 years old and runs a $100 million portfolio with no college education. It's pretty impressive. So we sat down and created five core values, and they are have fun is the first one. Do your best is the second one. The third one, which is my favorite, is have a juvenile's thirst for learning. And that is be that 3 or 4 year old that always says, well, why, daddy? Why? Right? Never take yourself too seriously. And I think what the fifth one is, I'll remember it here in a second, but
they all have a common theme, right?
Yeah. The common theme is we want you to be human, you to be who you are. I don't care if you're introverted, extroverted. I don't care if you're a sharp personality or a jovial personality. No, we want you to be who you are and explore how to make your role or us as a company better, and we'll live within who you are. And the reality is because Cassie and I both want to come to work every day and be who we are.
Right. And we definitely have a lot of people have a lot to learn from that, I think, because it just goes to show you how you can really be who you are, be successful, find a niche, find something. Obviously, it took you a while to, you know, to make mistakes and to, you know, to get to where you got to, but you know, I would say just don't give up, right? Keep that dream alive and keep the open mind, right? You will find that that path.
It's funny because everybody thinks that we've gained all this success in 5 years, and I tell everybody that I've been a 30-year overnight success.
Yeah,
it's really not been 5 years. It's been tripping over myself for 25 years to be able to be put in the position of success for the last five.
Yeah. And I'll just go back to the beginning where you talked about, you know, someone who's looking to get into the space or wanting to start in, no matter where you're coming from, the best kind of barrier to entry is just find someone like yourself that has obviously has common interests, common, you know, common goals, but more importantly, that you can bring value to them and just learn from them, apprentice from them. I think that's really overlooked in our education system, the value of apprenticeship, which I find is the biggest, you know, form of education.
So I talk about this all the time is cultures. And you obviously come from a certain culture, right? And that's in the Jewish faith. Someone had to pass all of that down to you, right? The very, what I would call rigid rituals, et cetera, that you go through on a regular basis have passed down from rabbi to dad, to you, to your kids and so on. Right.
Right.
The same thing holds true in like the tribes of Africa. They've done the same thing. The Mayan culture did the same thing. The issue that I have in America is we don't do that in America. And as the American culture, we don't pass it down like your forefathers have done to you. And so I mentor a lot of people on a regular basis. I've probably got 7, 8 people I'm mentoring right now because no one ever did that to me. I had to scrape it from here and there and this and that. And I had some pretty good examples. My stepfather was a pretty good example of work ethic, as well as he bought a single family on a lender note. The guy that owned it financed it for him when he was 25 years old or something. And then he went on to buy a duplex and lived in one side while he fixed the other side up, and then recycled that money to buy a bigger house and so on, so on, so on. And that's been part of their wealth journey through the years. So I had some pretty good examples But no one, even them, never sat me down and taught me, hey, this is what you do and this is how you do it. And you got to be patient. You got to be systematic and so on. And those, what I called your rituals, those rituals have to be rigid. Mm-hmm. And you just keep recycling those same ones. I really wish our culture was like that, because everybody could know what financial literacy was about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it goes obviously beyond the financial rituals, right? Yeah, it does.
I just use that as an example because everybody relates to money, right?
So. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but when you have, you know, new people coming up with ideas and trying to put it on everyone else, like this is how it should be, you lose a lot. And it's hard to take people seriously that way. But nevertheless, John, I would love to transition now. We can go on and on and on and on. Yeah. But what we, you know, try to keep to our time limit here on the Weiss Advice. So I want to transition now to four questions I ask all of our guests. This is the final four. The first question for you is, what is the worst job that you ever had?
The worst job I ever had, I'm going to pick two. One, my real dad's best friend owned a janitorial company. And I used to go with him at 14, 15 years old into nasty bars and stuff like that. And I was the doodle pad guy. So we'd strip and wax the floor, and I got this little doodle pad on a stick, and I would scrape the edges of the floors with a doodle pad and a scraper and clean all the spit and gump and all that stuff out of these bars. And sat there for years working for him, asking myself, what in the world is this ever going to do for me, right? And in the end, you can walk into my offices in storage and they are spotless. I had a strip and wax floors, right? So there's that one. And I worked for Ross Dress for Less for 7 months. And the culture there was just so bad that both me and my wife worked there. And we both quit with no jobs because of how bad the culture was. So both the job task and the culture part, that was my two worst jobs ever.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's taught you a lot, brought you to where you are, obviously, not just the clean floor, but obviously the...
Well, the culture part taught me how not to treat people.
Right.
On one of my first corporate visits, the regional vice president walks in and tells me to go get one of my schmucks out of the stock room and have them size this rack. And I was like, did he just call my team a bunch of schmucks? Yep.
Oh man, that's horrible.
That was the culture. Yeah.
Yeah, that's horrible. But again, that does teach you a lot. I always say, right, you have to learn from everyone. Everyone you come in contact with, you have to learn something from. And oftentimes it's what not to do.
That's correct.
Or how not to act. That's, you find a lot. But the second question I have for you is, what is a book that you've read that has given you a paradigm shift?
Years ago, it was How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, a good staple book for anybody, right? I mean, something as stupid as, like, what's the most important name in the world? It's yours, right? So, yeah. But most recently, probably 10 years ago, was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So, and the paradigm shift there for me was the story he tells in the book about going to the pharmaceutical store, talking the manager into letting him have the comic books that they ripped the front pages, the cover of the comic books off to make them devalued. And the agreement that he had to make is that he couldn't sell them. So he took them all home, put them in his basement, had his sister man the door, and he went and told all of his friends for a nickel an hour, they could come read as many comic books as they wanted to. So he had all the kids in the neighborhood sitting reading comic books. He wasn't selling them. He was renting them. And the paradigm shift there in the business that I'm in right now is he used other people's time and other people's money and other people's resources to make himself money, mm-hmm. right? And I do that all the time. I'm using your podcast right now. Came out there so that people invest with me so that I can make some more money. And I use their resources, which is money, and so on and so on and so on, right? So it's the same paradigm. It's the same business model, just on a different level. But I had a big paradigm shift because I always knew that you could use other people's money and other people's time. I just didn't know how to do it. And he did it a nickel at a time, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I do bigger dollar amounts than
that. a little more now. That's awesome. So third question for you is, what is a skill or talent that you would like to learn?
Probably like now, my next thing is how to organize a fund, like qualifying with the SEC, getting all the legal paperwork pulled together, how to take it out to market so that it's successful and so on. We've syndicated every one of our deals. So we raise them through friends and family and one-on-one conversations with people over time. And so to do an actual fund intrigues me, but it also scares the living daylights out of me because I don't know how to do it. So I've been over the last 4 to 6 months educating myself on how to do it just gradually. But I'd like to full force just jump into it and learn how to do it to make sure I do it right. Credibility is a big thing for me, particularly with investors. I want to do what I say and say what I do. And I think a fund, not knowing how to tell them what we're doing about the fund, mm-hmm. I want to be able to be educated enough to tell them what we're doing.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you also have to, you know, learn how to put the fun in fund.
Absolutely. That's true. Yeah, which I typically do.
Right.
I'm the goofball in the room all the time, so that's pretty easy.
But that should come with, obviously, with its challenges. But I think that's the best way to do it. I think in terms of capital raising in general, what I've found is that when you know enough about it and you can be the educator, that gives you the best foot in the door. And I don't have to tell you that, but
well, that was the hard part is back then, you know, 5 years ago, I knew what I was doing in operations. So people trusted me from handling their money, but I didn't know how to structure a deal. I didn't know what was fair, what wasn't. I just knew what people told me at the time. And I've since done deals in all different ways because what's fair is only perceived by the person that's investing in your deal, right? So we've done all kinds of creative stuff to get deals done because everybody perceives fair as being something different, not just what the institutions tell you that you need to do.
Right. And I think you have a lot of flexibility when you're growing and you're starting out, right, to be open to those kind of things. But starting a fund is obviously much more establishmental. What's the word?
More whatever. Corporate.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yep. I agree.
So fourth and final question for you, John, what does success mean to you?
I think I touched on some of that earlier. Like success for me is waking up every day and being able to be who you are, right? So, you know, a lot of people rate their success based on how much money they have. And I've learned through like Rich Dad, Poor Dad that money's just a tool. And you know, if you look at it in the form of having tools, you know, if you have more money, you just got a bigger toolbox, right? You have more hammers, you have more nails, you have more whatever. It just gives you more resources to get stuff done. But success to me is being able to achieve those financial goals and still remain humble and still be a person that people enjoy being around, all that stuff. So to me, success is being likable, you know. So they always say, oh, well, money's going to change you. Well, now, if you were an asshole before you had money, you're just going to be a bigger asshole now is all it is.
Right. So, it's definitely an amplifier, that's for sure. If you're a humble person, if you're a charitable person, even if you don't have a lot, you'll continue to do so, and that will be amplified. But if you don't, like people will say, oh, I'll give a lot of charity when I have a lot of money. No, you won't. No, you won't. If you don't give a lot now with the limited resources you have, then you won't then either.
Yeah. So give of your time if you don't have money, right? So and that's how I've been is I never had money. So instead of giving away money, I always gave my time or my knowledge or whatever. And I right. continue to do that to this day.
Absolutely.
I give my money too now because I have some.
For sure. But you still have to give your time. I mean, I think that goes without saying. So yeah, that's truer words have not been spoken. And I think it holds true with anyone on every level. And I think we had one of our first podcast guests on this show, definitely in the first 10 episodes, I believe. So this is close to a year ago. If anyone listening to this can go back to that show, it was with Iris Lodowitz, the president of Eastern Union, one of the biggest mortgage broker companies in the country. And he said he teaches his, you know, brand new incoming brokers, like, give, you know, tithe your money or give a little bit your first deal, right? You make $1,000, make $5,000, like, give a piece of that right away. Don't say, I'm going to do it when I make a lot of money. And that will, it will help you. It would definitely help you and get you beyond that. It's truly a blessing when you do that. And it definitely shows. So
that's how I define success, because if you are successful towards people, people will be successful towards you.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out with us to share some of who the man behind the storage is.
That's funny.
And where can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they choose to?
Oh, as I always say, it's Pinnacle Storage Properties with an S.com. And it's John, J-O-H-N, at J-O-H-N-M-A-N-E-S.com. So John at johnmanus.com. We're 210-818-1496. Come join the fun, because we're having a blast.
And you can go ahead and call him. He'll pick up.
I will. I do. It's crazy. It's the craziest thing. I actually answer my phone.
I know, right? I cold called you. I remember a few years back.
Yeah.
I was surprised you picked up the phone. I was like, oh, that's great. Okay, this is a guy I want to talk to again. And since then I stopped making cold calls. But
yeah, you found this thing called LinkedIn, and now people call you versus you calling them.
Exactly. It works much better.
There's a paradigm shift if anybody wants one.
Yeah. 100%. Well, thanks again, John. It's been a pleasure. It really has. And look forward to speaking again next time.
No problem, Yona. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
And to all of our listeners, remember, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn, send me a DM, a connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.